I just got to tell you about Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, the very best school I have ever seen in my 30 years as a Christian. Over 100 people on staff, Christ-centered, top academics, affordable, and all of this for your kids, ages 2.5 years to 12th grade. Call Maranatha Christian Center at 303-431-5653. That's Maranatha, 431-5653.
One warning, there's truth overhead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and Yardline.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. You're listening to 50,000 watt AM 670 KLTT, the most powerful Christian radio station in America. Michael Reagan is a successful radio talk show host and conservative Christian, and he has a book out, Michael Reagan, Twice Adopted. And Sean Hannity said that whenever he hears Michael's story, that it brings tears to his eyes. And I'm thinking, Sean, you're being a bit wimpy here. Toughen up. But you know, Sean is right. This is an incredibly powerful story. And I'd like to quote a few excerpts, writing of his dad's funeral processions in his book, Twice Adopted. Michael Reagan writes, "We saw an ocean of people, seemingly without end. Some people waved and some held flags. Some wept openly. Firemen's ladders arched over the freeway, draped with old glory. The firemen saluting my dad as his hearse passed by. Not only was traffic stopped in our lanes, but the opposite lanes as well. People stood on their cars, waved signs, and expressed their love for my father." And then Michael Reagan spoke at the Sunset Memorial Service at the Reagan Library in California on June 11, 2004. And these words are hard for me to read, but I want to take a few excerpts and read them to you on the air. My own father, Bob Enyart, he died and I eulogized him. And my dad, he wasn't the president of the United States. He was just a construction worker. And I was not adopted, as was Michael Reagan, but just a natural son. But there's so much of what Michael said of his dad that reminds me of my own father. And for all the dads out there today listening on this, the most powerful radio station between Chicago and L.A., I hope you become this kind of dad, the kind of dad that Michael Reagan thanked and said goodbye that day. Here's a brief excerpt. "Good evening. I'm Mike Reagan. You knew my father as governor, as president, but I knew him as dad. I want to tell you a little bit about my dad. Ronald Reagan adopted me into his family in 1945. I was the chosen one. I was the lucky one. And in all of his years, he never mentioned that I was adopted, either behind my back or in front of me. I was his son, Michael Edward Reagan. He gave me a lot of gifts as a child. He gave me a horse. He gave me a car. But there's a gift he gave me that I think is wonderful for every father to give every son. Last Saturday, when my father opened his eyes for the last time and saw Nancy, he gave her such a wonderful, wonderful gift. When he closed his eyes, that's when I realized the gift that he gave to me, the gift that he was going to be with his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Back in 1988, on a flight from Washington, D.C., he told me about his love of God, his love of Christ as his Savior. I didn't know then what it all meant, but I certainly know now. It's the gift of knowing where he is this very moment, this very day that he is in heaven. And I could only promise my father this: Dad, when I go, I will go to heaven too. Thank you for letting me share my father, Ronald Wilson Reagan." Michael, that's powerful. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on, Bob. How are you doing?
You're welcome. I'm doing well. It's neat when people show their humility before God and our Savior, Jesus Christ. And I'm so thrilled that you do that, being as public a person as you are.
You know, I tell you, I was only able to do it because there was a lot of people really praying for me. When Air Force One flew into Point Magoo there on that Friday afternoon on the 11th, you know, I knew I was going to be the first one up to speak. We were given a time frame to speak in. And you're thinking to yourself, how do you put your entire life into like 4 or 5 minutes? And I really didn't know where I was going to start. I didn't know where I was going to end. And when I got off the plane and I got into our car to take us up to the library, I turned on my cell phone to see if I had any messages. And I had two of my dearest friends, Jody and Mark, who had both called to leave messages, but they weren't messages. Yeah. What they were prayers.
Oh.
That I would find the right words to be able to use to open up that going away moment for my father. And as I was listening to the prayers on my cell phone as we're driving out of Point Magoo down on Las Posas Road, it's like the word just came to me. Oh. Tell them about your dad. And so what you heard was me telling people, you know, about my dad, because that week, everybody had honored him for being a president, talked about him being president, saving the world and, right, and what have you, and the world leaders that were there, Maggie Thatcher, Mikhail Gorbachev, and the rest of them that attended the services, but nobody had talked about Dad. And I just thought, maybe they need to hear about Dad.
And this guy who helped to save his own son.
Absolutely right.
Now,
and
Michael, let me ask...
Those stories just never got out.
Let me ask you this. When I eulogized my dad, there was only about 100 people there. And no world leaders. But I was very aware of the people in the audience who knew him growing up, but were not really aware of his, it was later in life for my dad, his deep faith in Jesus Christ. He became a Christian just a few years before he died at age 53 of a heart attack. Mm. And were you thinking about the people in the audience who perhaps just had no concern about Jesus Christ?
Not really. I wanted people to know about him. It wasn't really a concern for those people. If there was concern, it was more for Patty and Ron.
Okay.
Than for the other people, you know, that were out there. But I was just wanting to share my dad and tell a side of him that had not really been told, you know, that week, even though, you know, it was in church, you know, back in Washington, D.C. at the National Cathedral and what have you. People skirted, I think, the issue in many, many ways. And you know, I think people need to know, you know, if a man was able to save the world as he was and end the Cold War the way he did, then where did that come from? Where did his strength come from? Mm. It didn't come from just being, you know, hi, Ronald Reagan. It came from a deeper sense of purpose, and it came from, you know, truly his relationship with God. And the fact that he asked God every day for help in making the determinations he had to make to be able to be the president of the United States of America.
To say to the world that the Soviet Union was the evil empire, it, using terms that our culture despises, any statement of absolute right and wrong, good versus evil, that's not in vogue any longer.
No.
And what was fascinating was that the anger that generated, your dad calling the Soviet Union, the evil empire, there was more anger over that from the left than for the 20 million people that the Soviets had slaughtered.
Oh, 20 million plus that they had, in fact, slaughtered. You're right. And, you know, things haven't changed that much. I mean, look, you know, look, not too many days ago, the President of the United States, his inaugural address.
Right.
Talking about, you know, spreading a democracy. Nothing more than what Ronald Reagan espoused, nothing more than what John F. Kennedy espoused in his inaugural address. But because George Bush, you know, looks to God for guidance, somehow there's something wrong with what he said. And
yeah,
even you have conservatives who even say, well, maybe that was a bit over the top. I didn't think it was over the top at all.
Well, wanting to bring freedom and liberty to people around the world is as noble as you can get. When you look at Iraq, and if Saddam Hussein is filling mass graves and systematically raping women, it doesn't matter if a lunatic from halfway around the world came and stopped him. the whole world should rejoice. But when it's someone who professes faith in Jesus Christ, if they liberate 100 million people from Soviet tyranny or tens of millions from the Taliban and Saddam Hussein, the left would rather have those people imprisoned than someone who loves Jesus Christ getting the credit.
Well, look, go back to the first debates, basically, not this last time around, but back in 2000. Remember the question they asked George Bush? They asked everybody, name your favorite philosopher. George Bush had the audacity to say Jesus Christ, and they went nuts.
Yeah.
They went absolutely nuts. How can you say that? What can you be saying here? What are you doing? And then, you know, because we showed up and voted on Election Day, you know, we're taken to task because, like, you know, we're a bunch of wackos because we got involved in the process and went out and voted, well, you know, for America.
Well, Bush said Jesus Christ, and Al Gore mentioned his favorite Bible verse. I don't know if you recall that. He said it was John 16:3. He got it backwards.
Well, that's close.
He didn't say John 3:16.
Well, he's dyslexic.
Yeah, but John 16:3 says this. I just opened to it. It says, these things they will do to you because they have not known the Father nor me, which is sort of ironic. But, Michael, can we get back to your book?
Yeah.
Twice adopted. A lot of people, they understand once adopted, but I think only the Bible students out there will have an idea of what you mean by twice adopted. But can we start, you open the book so matter-of-factly, but tell a story of just a heart-wrenching story of how a young boy can begin life with utter devastation. Can you relate a little bit of that?
People need to understand. I mean, the second adoption is what allowed me, coming into God's family, which allowed me to eulogize my father and finally understand my father for who and what he was. And thank God that I got to that point in my life. But from the very earliest days of my life, coming into the family and being adopted into the family, you know, I was teased profusely by children at school who used to call me the illegitimate Reagan and actually call me, quote-unquote, the bastard Reagan. And I didn't know what it all meant, but I do know that it sounded terrible.
Well, your parents said you were chosen.
Well, they said I was chosen, so I thought that was neat to go to school and tell kids when they were, you know, everybody was like show and tell.
Yeah.
You know, I was chosen. But kids then started teasing me about being illegitimate. And I thought just maybe that my mother, Jane, was not aware that I was illegitimate if I was. So I better not tell her fear if that was the reason that my birth mother, in fact, gave me up for adoption.
And then you found a Bible verse.
I found a Bible verse, Deuteronomy 23:2.
That devastated you as a young boy.
Well, I was like 6.5, 7 years old, and I came home from the weekend. I was boarding at school at that time, first grade, and when I came home, I went to my mom's library and opened up a Bible, trying to find illegitimate and what have you, and it took me to Deuteronomy 23:2, which said, you know, all illegitimate children, their children of the 10th generation, will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Hmm. And I closed the Bible. That was 1952, and the next time I reopened it was 1978.
Oh, my.
As a 7-year-old kid, you don't know the difference, Bob, between Old Testament and New Testament.
Well, and you just assume that's it. God's saying, I can't go to heaven.
I thought God hated me.
I'm going to hell.
And I thought I was going to hell, and I truly thought I was going there, so I thought I'd help myself get there the best way I could. If God hated me, I could hate him more. So I really grew up, you know, with this great hatred of God because I felt God, in fact, you know, hated me. So I'd gone through the adoption and this kind of thing with the illegitimacy. And then, you know, by the time I was in third grade, I was really crashing. My parents had divorced. I was looking for affirmation in my life.
Well, that's the most horrific part of the whole book, this when you were in third grade.
Well, yeah. And this happens, trust me, to a lot of third graders. This is why I wrote the book. I really wrote the book from a child's perspective so people can see what a child is thinking in life. And maybe what adults can start doing.
Well, before you, and just very briefly, if you could relate that, but before you do, Michael, let me tell you the first caller I ever had, got a daily radio show 5 days a week for 14 years. The first caller, the show was about homosexual scoutmasters. Mm-hmm. And the first caller, he called in and he told the story of on their camping trip, their homosexual scoutmaster, and he was a predator. And so this gut-wrenching story, and, you know, I can't forget that being the first call of my show, my career on the air. But you had a nightmare experience in third grade.
Well, third grade, yes. My mother entered me into an after-school, you know, program with a bunch of other kids. And this man, Don Havlick, used to pick us up and take us to the park. And, I mean, here's a guy, everybody loved him. I mean, even all his kids loved him. The parents loved him.
Right.
He taught us to do all the things that our dads would have taught us possibly if our dads had been in the home. I mean, he taught us how to throw footballs and baseballs and taught us how to run and be little men. And that was really kind of cool because that's really what I wanted. I wanted to, like, earn my way into the family. I wanted my dad to be proud of me that I could throw a football, throw a baseball, and what have you. And I want everybody to like me because of that. And so he came in and took advantage of that situation, much like we drop kids today off at daycare centers. You know, who's going to affirm our children, us or somebody we've never met in our lives that we don't know their background?
Right. So and they know how to find kids, too. Your parents were tragically divorced by the time you were three, right?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he began the process of sexually molesting me at the age of 7 years old until, you know, all the way through third grade. And ultimately what he did is took me up to the Santa Monica Mountains and he had me take my clothes off. He took pornographic pictures of me.
And then threatened you with the pictures.
And then about 3 or 4 days later took me to his apartment after camp, told my mother he was taking me to dinner, and took me back there. And he developed a photograph in his darkroom in his apartment, what I now know to be a darkroom. Back then I didn't know what it was. And it was really magic to this little eight-year-old boy then. I mean, seeing a photograph come up.
Out of a
blank. And he asked me
page.
If I'd like to do one. And I said yes. And so he put the tongs in my hand and put paper in the tongs and then moved my arm from one pan to the second pan to the third pan. And what came up in the third pan was a naked picture of me. And I looked at that picture and he put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Wouldn't your mother like to have a copy?" And I knew at that very moment I had to get out of my mother's house and protect her from me. And it took me 6 years to have my mother get me out of her house and move me in with my dad when I was 14 years of age. And then I had to figure out a way out of my dad's house because I was trying to protect them. But I always knew those photographs were available when my dad ran for governor, ran for president of the United States.
Oh, what a nightmare.
And all the things you deal with from the male perspective of wondering what people will think of me. Will they think I'm homosexual? They always ask, why do kids keep these secrets? Why don't we tell? Right. You need to read the book Twice Adopted. You'll really find out why we, in fact, keep the secrets. And because one of the reasons is I don't want you to affirm all the things I'm thinking about myself. If I think I'm evil, I don't want to tell you and have you say, yes, Michael, you are evil.
Yeah, and that's one of the big questions right now with the Michael Jackson case and the kids over a period of years who allegedly were molested by him. And so his defenders are saying, look, why would these kids not come out immediately and say what happened?
Read the book. You'll find out you don't. It is the most horrific thing in the world. In the book as well, you know, Bob, there is a chapter where I talk about it is a slayer of the soul. What happens to you absolutely slays your soul. And until you can rid yourself of that, your molester, even when he stops physically molesting you, molests you mentally the rest of your life because everything you do is determined by that molester for the rest of your life. You become a failure. You're afraid to succeed because you don't think you're good enough to succeed in life. Relationships fail because you don't want that person to find out what happened to you as a child. You become a sexual addict in many ways. You become an alcoholic. You become I'd rather have you know me as a murdering drunk than know me for what happened to me as a child. I can live with being a murderer.
Right.
I can live with being an alcoholic. I can live with being a drug addict easier than I can live with the fact of what happened to me as a child.
Right. You know, I have three friends who grew up in the Denver orphanage, which is now closed. And they were all three molested by male staff members. And all three went on to have, you know, just incredible nightmares they had to overcome. But thankfully, they've become Christian pro-life activists,
which is
amazing.
You know, but what you go through, I mean, it's like what I went through when I was 16 years old. I used to steal money out of my father's wallet and go to downtown Los Angeles and buy prostitutes on Saturday night because I needed to prove to myself I was heterosexual. Because I didn't know. I really didn't know if I was heterosexual or homosexual. I didn't know what you would think of me. So if I could tell you, hey, I'm buying prostitutes on Saturday night and having sex on a regular basis,
yeah, that proves the
then
case.
It would overcome what I think you might think of me because a man touched me when I was 7, 8 years old.
And while it's different with lesbianism in our culture, with homosexuality, there is a reality that homosexuals are able to reproduce sexually. Those who molest young children so often put those children on a lifelong nightmare of fighting to regain their heterosexuality. Some never achieve that, and they live broken lives.
Absolutely right. In fact, I talk about in the book that, you know, like the government knows, the Justice Department's aware of at least 4 million pedophiles in the United States of America. 57% of them were sexually abused by family members or someone else. And we always get mad at the Catholic Church for what they've been doing because of what they've been covering up. But they're no different than what families do because we protect Uncle Charlie over the child. Mm. If Uncle Charlie, you know, molests a child in my house, two things will either happen. He will die or he will be arrested and sent to jail for the rest of his life.
Mm.
I mean, that's what you do. Because what happens is you literally kill that child's soul.
Right, exactly.
Is what you do. And the child does not outgrow it. I've learned now to compartmentalize it, is what I've done with my life. But it drove my life for all of my life until Colleen, my wife, came into my life back in 1973, began praying for me on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And finally, in 1987, I finally told her, think about that, got married in 75. It took me 12 years to tell her what happened to me as a child. 12 years.
The book is Twice Adopted, Michael Reagan, Son of Ronald Reagan, available everywhere, online, Amazon.com.
On my website also, I have signed copies at Reagan.com.
Reagan.com. Michael, if your birth mother, in the book, it's real clear you do not have hostility toward her. In fact, and you can argue that because of her lifestyle, you ended up going through the difficulty you did as a young child, but now you celebrate two Mother's Days every year and one on January 22nd. Now, I read that your birthday's on March 18th.
Yep.
So why do you do a Mother's Day on January 22nd?
Yeah, Roe v. Wade.
Roe v. Wade.
Because of Roe v. Wade. My birth mother, and I said this at the Republican convention, I'm blessed because my birth mother and my birth father, John Burgholzer and Irene Flower,
yeah,
and my parents, Ronald Reagan and Jane Wyman, all had something in common. They were all for pro-life, and all four of them were pro-adoption. And if Irene does not come to California and give birth to me at Queen of Angels Hospital back on March 18th, 1945, and give me up for adoption to Jane Wyman and Ronald Reagan, you and I aren't having a conversation. I like to run a survey on my show when I go out and speak, Bob, and the survey question is this. I only ask those people who have been adopted, I ask them to raise their hands, and the ones that raise their hands, I ask them this question. Would you have rather been aborted?
Hmm.
So far, over all these years, 100% of those people who have raised their hands have said, are you kidding? I'm glad I'm alive. And remember, we that have been adopted are probably the closest ones to abortion.
Yeah, that's a great point. And those who are especially thankful, other than you, are your wife and your children.
Yep, Cameron and Ashley and Colleen, you know, absolutely right. And I'm glad that I finally had a Christian woman in my life who prayed for me, got me back to church in 1978, you know, got me to start asking instead of blaming God for everything, and started asking God for help. And so the book is really written for people because going through adoption, going through sexual molestation, going through the divorce of my parents, going through child pornography, in the business we're in, we talk about these issues all the time. I lived them. I made it through to the other side. I don't think God had me go through it, live it, and get through to the other side without telling the people that there is a path to true happiness if you want to choose it.
And Michael, the thing Sean Hannity points out is that this book also will help parents, help grandparents figure out how to make our world safer for families and especially for kids.
Absolutely right. The key word in the book is, if you're going to have children, you've got to love them.
You've got to love them. Michael Reagan, thank you so much for joining us on Bob and Yurt Live.
Thank you, Bob.
Author of the book Twice Adopted, available everywhere and especially at Reagan.com. It's an honor to have Michael Reagan on the program. And if you, we used up this whole
segment talking to Michael. But later in the week, if you'd like to talk through his interview, feel free to call in. And especially if you buy the book and you read it and you want to make some comments over the coming weeks, feel free to do just that by calling us on air at 1-800-8-NYARTS. That's 1-800-836-9278. Denver Bible Church, what a neat time we have as a fellowship, and here's why. Because of the families. That's one thing that everyone at our church recognizes is the strength of the integrity of the families. Where children are safe, moms and dads are encouraged to be faithful to one another, to be committed, and the teaching that comes out of the Bible is one thing. Of course, that's going to encourage people to have great marriages and families. But what is so powerful is the example. You look in the row in front of you, the row behind you, and you see families that are committed to God. And single men also. Do we have any single women at the church? We have a dearth of single women. Denver Bible Church is more of a man's church. It's just the way it is. You know, we don't try to be nicer than God. And so the ministry appeals a lot to men, and that's why the families that come to Denver Bible Church are so strong, because it's not the moms dragging their kids to church and dads at home sleeping on the couch and watching a football game. Although if it's a Super Bowl, maybe. Well, no. Yeah, sometimes. But we're not legalistic at church. But it's a neat place to go where you will be encouraged. You'll learn ideas. You'll see examples. You'll be edified and built up on how to raise my kids in a godly way, how to be a good influence on those around me and my grandkids. Also, I want to tell you about Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. What a neat school that is. In fact, our 7-year-old son, Zachary, goes there first grade right now. And Cheryl and I have had kids at Maranatha going back, 15 years ago or more, 18 years ago, and on and off for a dozen years or so. And I've advertised Maranatha beginning 12 years ago, I think, for some years. And now it's been some months I've been advertising them again. They have over 100 staff members, beautiful 20-acre campus, Christ-centered, top academics, all this for your kids, ages 2.5 years to 12th grade. So call Maranatha for more information at 303-431-5653. Or you could go to our website and find a link to Maranatha. We're at KGOV.com. And the plot manuscript, have you read it yet? Somebody's just read it. Somebody we saw at the March for Life, and they came up to us and said, Bob, we're so excited. I'm so excited. I said, about the march? And she should have said, yeah, about the march. But she said, about the plot. I'm almost done reading it. It's so neat. I understand the Bible now. And she said, I'm going to join the Book of the Month Club. I said, oh, which one? She said, I'm going to buy one plot every month and give them out. I thought, wow, what an idea. We might have to add that to our subscription options. If you enjoy reading, the plot manuscript is 330 pages. For people who'd rather listen, we have it on audio tapes in 5 albums on MP3 CD-ROMs. So go to kgov.com, call us at 800-8-NYART, or just ask for a catalog at 800-8-NYART. That's 800-836-9278.